This is Mae Bressel, and it's the second half of World Watchers, a program investigating and exploring certain characters who weave in and out of not the fiction, the nonfiction part of history, connections to Nazis, to death squads, narcotics traffic, gun running, political assassinations, and specifically in this case, Ernest Kaiser, an American, passed off as an American and German, Ernest von Kaiser, who now it turns out has a questionable background that nobody knows of, and a part in Hitler's army intelligence and so forth, and useful as an example to kill a man like William Taub at the time of Watergate. Nothing against Taub particularly, except that he hires hit teams to kill Taub, who has information, whether it's on Josephine Baker or Jimmy Hoffa, or produces a movie titled Z, or on the Greek military fascist that took over Greece. He was producing that movie, but a person could be murdered for that, and Ernest Kaiser's role was there. And then all of a sudden he attaches to a case that has to do with the Metropolitan Bank in Tampa, Florida. Now, way back in 1982, 3 years ago, January, just 3 years ago, I started a broadcast. It was number 529, and consecutively 530, 531, 532, and 533, 5 weeks in a row, I discussed the connections and the possible reasons for sabotaging Air Florida, the airplane that went into the Potomac River, and the involvement of the CIA. And I mentioned George Bush and his suspicious connections to that flight, January the 25th. January 31st, I talked again about George Bush and his role to that, not his role, but relationship to a person who drowned on that plane, who worked for him, and the spy possibilities of the passenger list of the people on the plane. And that brought the second broadcast, I brought up the names of Fred Fielding, the current attorney in the White House, he's from Watergate fame, who works for Ronald Reagan, and Richard Allen, who was dismissed as the National Security Advisor because of payoffs from Japan, and Robert Vesco. Now, I was referring to Robert Vesco and the suspicious airplane that went down in the Potomac River 3 years ago. So it's interesting that in 1985, an article comes out about this Ernest Kaiser, who indeed had papers and documents and worked with or was knowledgeable about Robert Vesco, and who also is interested or concerned with a man whose bank has something to do with that particular plane crash. And then the next week, 531, I was talking about the connections. This was in February 82, of Muammar Gaddafi and Edwin Wilson to the airplane crash, Air Florida, that went into the Potomac. And coincidentally or not, but I don't think so, and I think my research was pretty accurate, the same Ernest Kaiser who is messing into the Metropolitan Bank that had a, I think, a deciding factor in this plane crash, he's the one that brought Edwin Wilson of Task Force 157 back into a prison. Wilson tried to get Kaiser killed and also Bartello, the prosecutor. But I was talking about George Bush, Robert Vesco, and Edwin Wilson, and all of those tap into and have to do with Ernest Kaiser, who in 1985 is linked in this article in Tampa, Florida, to those events. In 1982, February, I did more on Air Florida. And very seldom do I take any particular subject and do 5 weeks of it in such depth. I've done some Jonestown and a few events, but usually it's 2 or 3 weeks and you get a good groundwork and we can update it later. But I was very interested in that airplane crash that went down, and I feel I did a very good job. And those of you who have the back broadcast, you can listen to them again. And in the Wall Street Journal in March of 82, the fifth broadcast I did on that airplane crash, it had to do with, the Wall Street Journal story was called Tumble in Tampa, and it has to do with a $53 million hunk of money missing from Fort Collins, Colorado, that could link to Wilson and Turple and a Mr. Tafoya, $51 million missing from Atlanta, Georgia, And the Tampa, Florida bank collapsing, the largest bank collapse since 1976. And a Richard Greco, the vice president of the Super Bowl and the Metropolitan Bank. The Tampa and Florida article goes into the Metropolitan Bank and their loans of millions of dollars to an Alan Wolfson with no collateral. And the bank examiner for the Metropolitan Bank, the large bank that collapsed, was a Mr. Williams who was on Air Florida. Now, at the time the plane collapsed, there were people at the bridge as if they were waiting and knowing where it was going to crash, just as the Dorothy Hunt plane crash went down in over Chicago at the height of Watergate. And Sherman Skolnick did that marvelous work that the FBI men were circling around all where it was going to crash. And there was an order not to identify a passenger on the plane. And, of course, I knew something was wrong right away. They didn't want his name in the media or to be recognized, and that was a hint of a major problem. And already 3 weeks had gone by, or 4 weeks, when this article came out in the Wall Street Journal. And the reason that I knew they didn't want him to be identified, and he did in turn, in fact, his name was Mr. Williams, described as the hero in the plane crash. At the beginning, they said the hero remains a mystery. And the Wall Street Journal identified him as the bank examiner from the Atlanta, Georgia Federal Reserve, who was called in to check out the banking problems. We're talking about not $101 million, but a lot of money. And it had to do with the 49ers and Mr. Bartello and scandals from the East and the Midwest and, of course, out to California. It was a big story. And Mr. Williams was one of those people who allegedly passed up five different times when a helicopter could have helped him to help other people. But I don't know why the chief investigator for this scandalous, tangled web would choose to die at this time. Or was the hero story created by the same law enforcement that let him die, that forbid his being identified until much later? Even if he died a natural death, they could have identified him at that moment. But there was all this mystery. So the bank examiner to the Metropolitan Bank situation was killed on the Air Florida. And Arlen Williams was given some kind of an award by Ronald Reagan the past year. His wife was called in, and he was recognized as a hero at that particular instance, even though they tried to cover it up. Now, the Tampa Tribune, September the 17th, 1984, had a story, secret plea bargain alleged and denied, and that went in Donald Ragar, the former Metropolitan Bank president, the one whose bank was being investigated by the late Mr. Williams. And I had early identified Edwin Wilson and George Bush and Robert Vesco connections, to that crash. So the Tampa Tribune, this was again given by Ted Rubenstein, who gets papers for David and me from the back east. I don't get the Florida papers. And Mr. Donald Ragar, the head of the bank, had charges dropped. He was guilty. He had 15 counts of banking violations. They found him guilty of two, and they dropped 13. Now, along comes Mr. Kaiser into this tangled web where he's only held for two charges, and 13 are dropped. A self-professed CIA man who had been arrested in Tampa in 1984 and wants to help him get out of those charges, as I say, for the fee that he'll bring in Vesco, Robert Vesco. And Robert Vesco at that time, see, you have to put it back in its time slot. This was 1982 when this was going on. Robert Vesco, who took money from the investment overseas operation, worked with Bernie Cornfield. He was close to Bernie Cornfield, who was cohabiting with Vicky Morgan at the time, the woman who had her head crashed in with a baseball bat several years ago. And if you read the paper this week, Mr. Marvin Pancoast is dying of AIDS. The man who was charged with killing her has AIDS. He's at Vacaville Prison. And there were no fingerprints on the baseball bat. And there was somebody else in the closet. And her documents and papers were taken. She had her skull crushed in. He took the rap. Now he's dying of AIDS. Now, Robert Vesco, in this time period in 1982 in Tampa, when that went down, was floating around the Caribbean. He had been a former partner, worked with in different ways in California, New Jersey, and so forth, with William Casey, The best background on Vesco, there's many books on him, is Still Spooks, the one by Jim Hogan, and partners with Bernie Cornfield. Now, a woman was cohabiting between the house of Cornfield and Alfred Bloomingdale. That was Vicky Morgan. And Alfred Bloomingdale was on Ronald Reagan's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, working with the Defense Department. She was over in Europe with the King of Morocco and heads of states. Vicky Morgan was in this milieu of Cornfield and Bloomingdale and United States intelligence. And Vesco was a plum that they would like to bring in so that he can't blackmail them. Or maybe he's on a salary and stays in Cuba and the United States is afraid to bring him here because if there's any trials, we'd have the same situation that you have with Klaus Barbie in France. His story can't go to trial even though he's arrested in 1983 because it would shake this country. Vesco's story would shake this country and Reagan and Nixon, and Barbie would shake the so-called left or the resistance or the people that were passed off as opposing fascism who actually work for the Nazis. We have the same thing in this country with the people around John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, and as soon as the two boys were wiped out, they went to the Hughes organization and to Robert Keith Gray and Mr. Mankiewicz and Mr. Schlesinger and the whole team, Larry O'Donnell, and the whole team around John Kennedy were traitors to him, never cared who killed him, and if the truth of the Kennedy murder came out, there's more than you would want to know. The tangled web of spies, traitors, deception, friendships that are thrown out the window when the selected Patsy is murdered, their true cover comes out by their silence, and the silence is actually loud. It's loud and clear how they keep the truth from coming out. Burke Marshall was another one, and I could go on and on. The traitors to the assassinations, the deceivers, the assassins left in the grave, and they take on other positions. Now, Vesco can't go to trial. That would be impossible. And Klaus Barbie is still dangling there. New York Times' Jeff Gerth had a story February the 3rd, 1985. See, the Air Florida went down in the Potomac River with the investigator in 1982. Tampa Tribune has a story about Donald Ragar, the Metropolitan Bank president, and the charges being reduced, and about Ernest von Kaiser. December the 5th, 84, the Houston Post has a story. So now it's just 2 months later, February the 3rd, 1985. Jeff Gerth is one of the best writers on organized crime syndicates for the New York Times. He says, Ernest Kaiser has now left the United States himself. This is in February. He's a fugitive wanted on a trial in Tampa, Florida for interfering with the Metropolitan Bank case. And the question is, what did he know? Why did Ernest Kaiser put himself into that at all, a top-level spy, to get into that case at all? And Gerth writes, he's been charged with defrauding Donald Ragar of $60,000 to get him off. He's fled to Germany, to Munich, then Bonn. He portrayed himself to Mr. Ragar as a secret government operative involved in snaring. Now, this is the interesting part that Jeff Gerth writes about in 1984. He was involved in snaring Nazis and hiding them in South America, illegally putting some into communist countries to free the dissidents there. He's involved in drug rings and high-level drug rings in the Middle East. Now, Tommaso Busetta from Syria was the drug activist, the primary witness now in the trial in New York and Italy. Out of San Paulo, Brazil, Romeo Tuma, the chief of police who lied about the Mengele corpse, is that being Joseph Mengele, is from Syria, who's worked with the death squads and the Nazis in South America. Henry Arsan, and I'll do more on him next week on the drugs and murder and assassinations, who was killed in a jail in Italy, was the top Syrian head of the connections of Banco Ambrosiano, the P2, Licio Gelli, who attended Ronald Reagan's inauguration, links to the Reverend Moon, and so forth, that tangled web of the P2. Arsan was from Syria. Busetta, Tuma, Arsan, and this group are involved with the Syrian drug running and narcotics. And here is Mr. Kaiser in 1985 of February talking about working with Nazis hiding in South America. Now, I read that in February 85, and I wasn't thinking anything of Kaiser with Nazis in South America and drug running in South America or the Middle East. And February 85 was when attorney Manfred Roeder gets a jail letter from Paraguay that's the official opening of this case. Uncle is dead, he drowned. And February 85 is when the witness, the medical witness for the CIA, the pathologist, Mr. Curley, is getting pictures of a skull to do his story. So that in this time period, Jeff Gerth is talking about Ernest Kaiser's relationship to Nazis in South America, to drug running, and he himself is in Bonn, Germany in February, and that's when the top drug dealers are making the connection that Mengele is alive, that he deals drugs with Klaus Barbie, that they saw him and lived with him, and that's when the escalation of the reward money came, as the drug dealers were arrested in Germany, and where they are located is where Ernest Kaiser moved to, and Kaiser knew all of them, and Kaiser is saying to the man who helped him escape, I'll bring in Mengele, and I guess he thought he would get the $3 million reward. What I'm trying to do for you, and not going too fast, is to show you that certain people that I've done broadcasts about, and also see Taub, who was left to be murdered by Ernest Kaiser, and Kaiser was charged with the attempted murder, was familiar with the Vatican intelligence, the people who set up the lie that the plans to kill the Pope were the KGB and the Bulgarians, the leftists, as against the right wing, Licio Gelli of the P2, Francesco Pazienza, the friend of Alexander Haig, and Michael Ledeen of National Security Agency, and Claire Sterling and Paul Hensa. This whole group who created that lie about the Jha's links to the leftists are tied to the milieu of Mr. William Taub, who was to be murdered, to the Air Florida investigator who went down on the plane, the connections of Bush, Vesco, and Edwin Wilson in that milieu to the Air Florida crash, and Kaiser, who interjects himself into the bank that was being investigated, and his links to Nazis in South America, and he's German himself, and fought in Hitler's army, and lived in Brazil, lived in the Middle East, and is familiar with all of these things, and knows where to go, just as the Israeli intelligence had given this other fellow who was murdered in 1983, Mr. Stewart, the papers and the orders of where Joseph Mengele had actually signed the papers for his father and mother's murder. Now, this man is dead, so you can't compare those fingerprints or that order, if it's on there, of Mengele. His wife killed him 2 years ago. She's going to trial now. So the Mengele thing has been brewing for a long time, and only May Brussel on World Watchers for 3 years, no, it's 2 years, since the arrest of Klaus Barbie and John DeLorean, and through the friends that I know have been to South America who have talked to Joseph Mengele, not recently, but a while back, who know all the inroads of the whole story and knew the pilot of the airplane that brought in the cocaine. There are many of them, but this was the biggest one for all of the Hollywood, Los Angeles area, William Hedrick. I was making these connections of their being alive and trafficking in drugs, and only in February, when these people started talking in their jails about the drug connections, then the CIA released the papers that, yes, Mengele was in drug dealing in 1979. Yes, the CIA knew it. Yes, it's secret. They didn't care about A, stopping the drug traffic, B, stopping the arms traffic that goes to the dictators, because that was the goal stated in 1945 and 48, as I mentioned last week, the papers of the State Department, get rid of the democracies, get rid of the liberals, and put in the dictatorships, because then you don't have a chance that the left seeks in. That's what H.L. Hunt was doing with the American Volunteer Group, described in the book Spooks, kill the left, kill the liberals. If you have a liberal, you let a communist in the door. If you have a democracy, you let a communist in the door. You have to kill these people. So Kaiser was part of that hit team. And also, if I don't have time this week, I'm going next week into the Rosh Niche because I think they're part of that Nazi network of drugs, assassinations, and one of the key factors in renting, or not renting, in buying the property out of, in Oregon, out of India they came and then bought this Muddy River property up in Oregon. The papers were done, the bank work was done, the property was owned from the bank in Dallas, Texas, the very bank where Jack Ruby went, the offices that H.L. Hunt had, the mercantile building, in Dallas, Texas, the same office where Connie Trammell went with Jack Ruby 2 days before John Kennedy was killed, out of the Mercantile Bank of Dallas, Texas, with all the banks in the entire world that there are. How come the money for this Rosh Niche ranch in Oregon came and was held in the Mercantile Bank in Dallas, Texas, and how come the attorney that got him out of this country within 48 hours was the same Ambrose who worked and set up Interpol with J. Edgar Hoover with his international Nazi Odessa network, and who worked with G. Gordon Liddy with the Gestapo techniques, who set up the White House Plumbers, which is a drug enforcement agency that worked with the death squads in South America. It gets way beyond coincidence that every major news story that we get of drugs and murders, attempted murders, and so forth, all connect to the same cities, the same banks, and have been connecting for the past 22 years. Before then, too, but I began studying it 22 years ago, so I'm talking about current things right now. The connection of these particular operations and these people to the White House, to Merrill Lynch, and to E.F. Hutton, I'm sure it's been in many articles, but the first time I noticed it was April the 10th, 1984, Los Angeles Times, the article titled, U.S. Smashes Drug Ring, $1.65 billion, written by John Goldman, that the federal government announced, and this was a year and a half ago, the huge international narcotics ring that for over 5 years smuggled $1.65 billion of heroin into the United States and distributed through mafia-run pizza parlors as conduits for cash and drugs. Now, 1979 is the exact year in February where the Bossert's were to say that Mengele drowned. And this article pinpoints the time, how long this had been going on, and it wasn't until February of 1985 that the CIA was forced to admit that they knew back to the year 1979 and knew goodness knows how much time before that, and after that they knew of Mengele's drug dealing. Now, 31 people had been arrested in New York City by a ring headed by Gaetano Badalamenti, one of the world's greatest heroin importers, and his companion Salvatore Catalano. They were arrested. Well, Badalamenti is the co-partner with Mr. Tommaso Buscetta, and several weeks ago I cited where Buscetta was testifying about his relationship with Badalamenti, and they were down in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and they were questioning whether they would be able to come back to the United States. And again, in the New York Times, November the 4th, 1985, tells about Buscetta's relationship with Badalamenti and working out of Sao Paulo, would they be able to go back to Palermo, Italy? And now it seems that Mr. Buscetta is testifying against Badalamenti, his co-partner, in exchange for, obviously, he'll get a light charge and the others will be caught with the drug dealing. But I mentioned before, and probably I'll be updating it many times, the same attorney representing Buscetta, Tommaso Buscetta, tied to Henry Arsène and the Milan Mafia and the Vatican and Paul Marcinkus and the late Roberta Calvi and so forth, the same attorney representing him, that he ends up as a kingpin testifying against his partner, is the attorney that represented the Bossert's, who said Mengele was dead, and Mr. Wagner, Gustav Wagner, the Nazi war criminal who was allowed to stay in Brazil. So that what we have here are a bunch of thieves, this one turning on the other one. But in the article in the New York Times a year and a half ago, it mentions Badalamenti's arrest, and it tells about how they delivered money to a hotel in New York City, the Waldorf Astoria. According to the FBI affidavits that were released in 1984, the ring laundered their cash through two New York brokerage firms, Merrill Lynch & Company, and E.F. Hutton & Company, and through banks in Switzerland, the Bahamas, and Bermuda. Now, isn't that a coincidence that the money should go to E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch? In March 82, according to this deposition, the Merrill Lynch security guard was sent to the Waldorf Astoria by a Franco Delatorre. He wanted protection to go down to Wall Street. He deposited $1 million in cash in an account named Trax, T-R-A-E-X. From March until July, Delatorre put another $9 million into Merrill Lynch and E.F. Hutton. Between July and September, he deposited another $8.25 million more with these two firms on 11 different transactions. October the 5th, 1982, E.F. Hutton was served with a grand jury subpoena regarding the cash that was going into that stock brokerage house. Now, it isn't, or how can it be such a coincidence? Is it really a coincidence that Merrill Lynch, the chairman of Merrill Lynch, was none other than Donald Reagan? His title was chairman of the board and chief executive officer of Merrill Lynch until 1981, when Reagan put him as secretary of the treasury, and then he became the chief of staff in the White House. While all of this is going on and all those millions of dollars of cash are going into a firm he isn't separated from, and since 1982, while he's holding a cabinet position and Henry Arsène has been arrested, the connections are going to the Vatican, to drug running, to the Bahamas, to Bermuda, to Swiss banks, over $1.5 billion into a company such as Merrill Lynch, who sits as a cabinet member of Ronald Reagan's administration. And the other firm that received the money, the president of that firm is Scott Pierce, George Bush's brother-in-law. And I always believe that Barbara Bush, for various activities that she'd gone into, was working with the CIA. Her brother became the president of E.F. Hutton. William Sapphire wrote an article in May of this year that I had on the air. He said, this is George Bush's brother-in-law, was assigned to oversee the retail branches of Hutton's hot summer of 1982, when federal and local investigators were shaken up and when E.F. Hutton's president George Ball lost to take over Prudential Banquet. Now, in 1982, in June 82, the Banco Ambrosiano scandal went full scale, and I'll detail the chronology for you a little more next week because time is running out now. The president of E.F. Hutton is taken off, and the brother-in-law of the vice president of the United States, who was the former director of the CIA, who worked with Edwin Wilson and Task Force 157 and Ernest Kaiser, George Bush's brother-in-law, is going to handle E.F. Hutton, where the money from Buscetta and Badalamenti and the gun running and the narcotics traffic is being put into banks in Wall Street in New York City. When, after the arrest in June 82 and the murder of Calvi, the arrest of Henry Arsène and that gang, the brother-in-law, the vice president, moves into the institution where the money was being deposited, and a cabinet member becomes chief of staff for the White House when his institution is the recipient of this money, and these two bases are covered. And at the same time, in June 82, or early in 82, is when Raymond Donovan was cleared the second time for his links to organized crime, to the Genovese family, the Schiavone Construction Company, to the murder of two primary witnesses that were wiped out in that summer of 82, that hot summer of 82. He still hasn't been given a sentence, or the trial hasn't started for Donovan. All these three people, and Paul Axall has a lawsuit coming up regarding his contacts or alleged contacts with organized crime coming out of Las Vegas, Nevada. So this is the Ronald Reagan team that are directly linked, no guessing about it, time sequence and so forth, not only to these scandals, to the cabinet positions, but to the lies that force these people to say that Mengele is dead, when Mengele worked with these people in South America and the Central Intelligence Agency knew it. Now, they're not getting away with it. As I say, there's been investigations, and they will indeed prove that Joseph Mengele did not die down there. But the reason they're lying are the convoluted webs that go to so many characters involved in things such as Downing, Air Florida, bank failures, missing millions of dollars, drug traffic, and murders. There is a concentrated team of people working and covering that are in operation now, and the trials are what is bringing this out. Good books, good articles, and the current trials, people talking at their trials, are the things that are putting these pieces together. Well, I run out of time again this hour. I don't know about you. It goes fast for me. I don't know if it goes fast for you. I'll be back with you next week to continue and do the connections of the Rashnish to some of this, the Bhagwan Rashnish who ran out of the country a couple of weeks ago. This is Mae Brussel. Thanks again for the articles and clippings, and I'll be back with you next week.